Mark Peterson, and this is the Stronger Philanthropy Podcast. This is episode 6 of season 2. This is where we love giving well. Family philanthropy can be a challenge for the family, as well as for charities seeking grants. Often families haven't developed a coherent vision for their philanthropy. Why is this? In my experience, it's because families are families, not well-run strategic organizations that have a stated mission and pursue it thoughtfully. Much family philanthropy tends to be a pot of money that's given to individual projects that somehow grab the attention of the various family members. It ends up becoming unfocused giving that's ad hoc and reactive to situational concerns. Today's guest represents a different sort of family philanthropy. Lance Robinson is the son-in-law of a Tennessee-based philanthropic family who has been given considerable latitude to develop a strategy and earn expertise around a specific and focused mission. I've known Lance for over a decade, and we've worked together on some projects, specifically in Cambodia, where his foundation, the Equitas Group, has carved out a leadership role in advocating and funding nonprofit capacity for anti-human trafficking efforts. I'm grateful that the family behind this philanthropy has trusted Lance's vision, and as a result, Equitas Group can proudly see its unique role and its impact in two places, Cambodia and Haiti. Let's discuss this now with Lance. Lance Robinson, welcome to the Stronger Philanthropy Podcast.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
In our conversation prior to starting the recording today, we were trying to recall when we first met.
I think it was in 2006, and I think you and I had a lot of resonance together with our discussion, and which has continued throughout the years and even into partnerships together. And so it's really led us up to this point, and I'm excited to be here speaking with you today.
Thanks. Just maybe situate yourself in this whole conversation of philanthropy, and how did you arrive at becoming the leader of a philanthropic organization?
It was a little bit of it was somewhat unexpected, although if I think about my journey of how I got here, it shouldn't have been completely surprising, but I was... For years, I was a church planner and pastor. I did that for actually 13 years. I started to get to that 40 mark in my own life and was trying to decide, do I want to keep doing this for another 25, 30 years or so, or do I see myself going into a new direction? And for me, on my mind has always been these issues of injustices. Sometimes it expressed itself in whether it was children at risk issues or, again, other types of poverty alleviation or injustice or whatever. That was on my mind. And so I made a decision that I wanted to explore that through a family connection and relationship. I had the opportunity to be able to explore some of that through ProVision Foundation. And so I approached the chair of the board, and when I did, I didn't realize it, but he was looking for an executive director and asked if I would consider that. And so I hadn't exactly thought about philanthropy, but as soon as I took that role on, I began to realize that this is still very much in line with my interest and passions and giftedness. It was still about vision and strategy, and but now I was able to help others achieve and partner with other people who were doing important work around the world to do their things. So so it was something that I just kind of happened into, but it was something that became a fit pretty right off the bat.
That's great. So you mentioned ProVision Foundation, and now now you're at Equitas Group. What was the transition there?
Yes. Yeah, so I was executive director of ProVision Foundation for 2.5 or 3 years. I was encouraged to not only take on the work that we had already been doing, but to develop and shape different sector focuses. So I immediately developed a sector focus around children at risk issues in addition to some of the other family. I mentioned it was a family foundation, family-related focuses. We were involved in, I think, six different international regions with quite a small staff. It was just me and one other program officer. And so while it was a very exciting time, it was a lot of drinking out of a fire hydrant and learning. And we were going at various parts around the world, so I might be supporting and interacting with a orphan and vulnerable children ministry in Guatemala or a street children organization, NGO in Romania, or going to Uganda for child soldier projects. All these were really good things, getting to work with a lot of great people that were addressing important issues. But we were trying to ask ourselves, what is our strategy? What is our vision? We were asking those who we were working with to present to us, impact and measurements and outcomes and everything else. But what are we doing? So that developed to where I began to think, and I had a conversation with our chair of the board, and I told him, if I love what I'm doing, I could continue to do this the rest of my life. But if I had my absolute druthers, I would focus in on a few of these issues we're running across and really go after them, become partners in the fight together with the nonprofits and the ministries we're working with, develop a knowledge base, develop a relational capital to where we're truly invested in partners into this. He thought that was a great idea. And so with the blessing of the board of ProVision Foundation, I started Equitas Group, and ProVision began to use Equitas Group as one of their two primary grant-making arms. So we're sort of an outsourced arm of ProVision Foundation. And our model our mission at Equitas was seeking justice for the vulnerable and oppressed, as well as encouraging holistic and responsive thinking toward that end. And the model was to focus on specific issues in particular geographic locations in order to generate higher impact and positive social change. And we focused in on two different areas that we'd already been working in and around. One was in Haiti, and it's to prevent and alleviate child domestic servitude. There's an issue there called Restavec, and we began to work with organizations that were addressing that issue. And then in Southeast Asia, our focus there was to prevent and alleviate child exploitation or sexual exploitation and trafficking of children. And there we focused in on the country of Cambodia. We had a few relational connections there, as well as the issue was quite prominent there at that time. And so so that's how Equitas came to be.
So is it fair to say that ProVision kind of represents the family philanthropy, and Equitas, as an arm of that, developed its own strategy that was quite particular, whereas the family philanthropy at ProVision would have still been quite broad and ad hoc in a way, more corresponding to each family member, perhaps?
Yes, and that's where it's been good, and it's been unique that ProVision, as more of the umbrella foundation, has a few members of the family that are able to operate out of that. Equitas Group and one other family-related organization has become outsourcing arms for ProVision Foundation. So it's actually a way for the family to be able to continue to have very focused directions, but also be broad enough to fit under the same umbrella.
That's great. How did you select those two areas, Cambodia and Haiti? What drew you to those locations?
Well, one of the areas that we were already involved in at ProVision Foundation was Hispaniola as a whole, so the Dominican Republic and Haiti. That direction had come about through we're located in Knoxville, Tennessee, and there was a local doctor here that was working with a local doctor on the border of the Dominican and Haiti, and we began to connect with that project, which led us to connect with other projects. And so when I started Equitas Group, I'd already had a program officer that I'd brought on who was working in Hispaniola and had come across this issue of Restavec, which is where a child from one family goes and stays with. That's what the word at Restavec means, goes and stays with another family. The intention usually is that the sending family cannot provide for this child, and so they're hoping that somehow that child will end up in a better scenario. The family that hosts the child usually needs a child to help around the house and do the chores and work. And as you can imagine, over time, it has devolved into very abusive situations for most all the kids in it. Not all completely, but most all. So my program officer at the time, he had come across this issue. We had begun to work with organizations that were addressing it. And so that became, with our interest in children at risk, addressing those issues, as well as the location of Haiti already having been working there in Provision, that became a natural place to say, okay, that can be one of our focuses. That will be one of our directives.
One of the things I like about what you just said about developing a focus area is you didn't rush into it and you relied on existing presence on the ground already and spent time there. And so you're not kind of making a quick decision to jump into an area, but you're really organically kind of expanding into an area.
No, that's exactly right. If I would say philanthropy usually takes patience. One of the values that we had early on and is to let the strategy evolve rather than imposing it. I think far too often we come in many times with good intentions, but we don't self-reflect that we're coming in with our own agendas and our own baggage and our own ideas. Through many people much wiser than me, I took their advice early on to be aware of that, find out what's going on, find out who the stakeholders are, listen and learn, take a posture of that, and then let that strategy evolve from that as you're going, rather than impose your own. And then once you become truly earning the right to be partners in that field, and that takes time, that's years, I think, then you can begin to be able to suggest and participate in strategy evolvement. But I think in the beginning, especially, you need to let the strategy evolve rather than imposing one.
Very good. So that was Haiti. What about Cambodia?
Yeah, Cambodia. We had, the issue of child trafficking was something that, again, this was 2008. And so in the early 2000s, there was a lot of realization and recognition of child sexual exploitation or commercial sexual exploitation of children. One of those areas that was talked about a lot was Southeast Asia, although now we recognize this is very much a holistic, unfortunately, global issue and not just limited to there or to the U.S. or to Eastern Europe or wherever, but it's prevalent everywhere. But that got on our radar. I then also met someone who's become a good friend of both yours and mine, Helen Sworn, the executive director of CHABDAI, which operates in Cambodia. I was at a conference in Chicago, and she led a breakout session on this issue. And so I went to that session and got to know her. We started a correspondence there. Simultaneously, I had another friend who knew I was interested, who suggested I go and visit a aftercare program for people, survivors who had come out of sex trafficking. And so I set up a trip and a vision trip and met with Helen, met with this aftercare program. And so that's where we got started. Cambodia was also a size country, and the nonprofit population there was of a size that we felt we could get to know that better than, say, Thailand or Philippines, which are other areas we've ended up working in as well. But so that's where we ended up starting, and that's how it evolved.
Right.
What kinds of projects would you be funding then in these places?
So we thought in terms of prevention, intervention, and restoration. And it's around those sorts of issues. Intervention and restoration was probably the first organizations and directions that we went. Prevention, that is going upstream, which I think is actually extremely important, maybe even more important, obviously, in the long run. That also takes quite a bit of time to know what are the push factors and the pull factors and what are some of the best ways to address these issues. So we began to do that as well as we learned. And when I say learning, we try to use a both-and approach with both evidence-based measured outcomes that we're looking for, as well as the relational dimensions of things. So we purpose to try to get to know the organizations and the people within the organizations as well, especially indigenous leaders in communities and indigenous organizations, because in getting to know that relationally, and then also finding out who is doing the best evidence-based sort of measured outcome sort of work, that goes a long way in providing the wisdom that you need to know how to better target your giving. So that's, again, how we evolved into not only intervention sorts of projects, but began to realize what are some of the best ways to go upstream and begin to look at prevention sorts of opportunities.
Let's explore that a little bit more. I think all of us can visualize projects that are intervention projects, such as, you know, working in a aftercare home or helping children get out of situations of abuse. But talk about the prevention projects being more upstream with your funding, because I think that's something many funders would like to explore more, but perhaps don't know how to get there.
Yeah, I would say in Southeast Asia, going upstream has led us into certain projects that become a little more holistic around sometimes community development as well as child education. So, for example, along the borders of Cambodia and Thailand, there's a lot of trafficking that can go across back and forth. And so we connected with several organizations that we had opportunities to partner with them in, for example, providing education for children that would normally be either roaming the streets or not having the opportunity to better themselves educationally and therefore not having vocation, therefore being susceptible to the trafficker who comes and says, hey, I could take you across the border into Thailand and you could work for my uncle at a restaurant, which, is obviously more than working for the restaurant. But that's one example of a prevention project. Also, as all boats rise within a community and as you're able to help with either poverty alleviation, education of children simultaneously, as well as teaching, helping community leaders teach child protection. When you synergize all those things together, that protects children from entering, being vulnerable to not only trafficking, but abuse in general. So there's also work where you work with families, because we know children who are vulnerable to being trafficked or abused further oftentimes can come from abusive or difficult homes themselves. So and there's similar sorts of work that we partner with in Haiti as well around the issues of breast effect. There's people like Beyond Borders that do model communities. I just got back from Haiti, actually, on the island of Léogonave, where they're seeing whole communities that are no longer receiving children into Restavek nor sending children into Restavek. They work around gender violence as well, and it's pretty remarkable, actually, and it took a long time for them to develop their model, but the social change that can take place within a community, once that community owns it themselves, is pretty impressive to see. So those are some examples of trying to go upstream.
I recall one upstream project that both of our foundations worked together on in Cambodia, the Royal University of Phnom Penh.
Yes.
And I always loved that one. It was such an out-of-the-box type project. Do you want to just talk about that one as an example for our listeners?
Yeah. And again, that's another value I know both you and I have, is not only partnering on the receiving side of funding, but also as funders together to come together and partner together. So yes, that was a program where as a result of Khmer Rouge and genocide and decades of difficulty, the education system isn't always what it needs to be in Cambodia, but yet there's a lot of Cambodians that want to see that change and are striving towards that change. And the Royal University of Phnom Penh is one of those places. They partnered together with a professor from the University of Washington, and she began to develop a section for social work and helping to cultivate the professors there who were coming, getting trained at the University of Washington, and then going back to Phnom Penh. What we knew on the ground, and what you and I knew, was that there was a dire need for social workers, indigenous Cambodian social workers, to work with nonprofits, to work as social change agents in community. And there was a shortage of that. So we connected relationally with this professor at the University of Washington. And long story short, you and I both, we all funded that endeavor, and now are seeing some very effective social workers come out of that. From what I understand, really top notch. And so that's been a real fun thing to see happen.
Can you maybe comment on the length of projects that you would fund?
Yes. So there's a few things on our end that cause us, because of the way our foundation is set up to operate. I know many foundations do multi-year grants, and we used to do that. But because of the umbrella connection that we have within ProVision Foundation, we operate on an annual basis of re-opting for granting and operations and that sort of thing. So we only can do annual granting. However, that being said, we find ourselves staying in the same projects, you know, many times for 2 to 3 years, I would say. Some organizations, well, I was about to say, but let me say this first. Many organizations, such as I mentioned Beyond Borders, I mentioned CHEBDAI, and I could name many others that I would consider almost anchoring organizations within our directives. We end up partnering with them year in and year out. Sometimes the projects vary, and sometimes those projects are 3 to 4 years. Sometimes they're more, sometimes they're less. But anchoring organizations, we will partner with them ongoingly. So I don't know, is that?
Yeah, that's good.
Get at your question, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What are Equitas's current priorities, and where are you at right now in terms of your vision and strategy?
We've had some changes just over the last 2 years, year and a half to 2 years. We went through a time where the funding source, where we ended up funding-wise having a narrower budget, and it actually caused us to have to take a step back and reflect more on what are some of the other ways we're contributing to organizations. And so a priority for us has always been to do more than funding. In fact, part of our model to accomplish what we do is not only funding, but also advising, advocating, and partnering, bringing other partners and donors in with us. So that became more prominent and more balanced in the last year and a half or two. I would say that that's been something that I've continued to find a lot of energy around, and that is to be in that consulting, advisory, or advocating role, as well as funding. So that's one way that we've changed a little bit. Also, as we've gotten more of a knowledge base and more of a, relational capital with various partners who are doing excellent work, it's also opened us up to have other opportunities that are sometimes outside of our geographic regions that we will weigh on a case-by-case basis. But, I kind of call it more of a needle-moving opportunity. If we see those, then we'll get involved in those as well. So it's gotten a little more fluid than tight, that we just won't do anything else except for Haiti or Cambodia. And I think that those are areas that we're continuing to explore as well. What are there more needle moving sorts of opportunities, big picture things that we can help make happen? Are there other areas that we want to develop our model around, other directives that we may be moving towards? And I guess until we actually do, we have some of those things we're thinking about, but until we do know what direction we want to go, I guess we'll just let the board keep mulling over that before we announce anything. So,
good. Well, that's really enlightening to hear just how you operate and how you've refined your focus. Is there anything that you'd like to share with listeners who might be developing their own foundations around developing your strategy and mission? Things that you've learned along the way that might help others?
Yes, I would say this is a model. It's not the model I think everybody ought to have. I do think we all ought to be striving for the same things we're asking those who are presenting their proposals to us, that we also develop our own way of how do we measure impact, how do we think about our focus, what are we after, and what do we as philanthropers, what's our skin in the game? How do we partner together and truly, develop tight focuses as well? Because, it's easier for us many times, not all the time, but for us to not have that sort of a strategy that's measured and tight. And that's one thing I would say. And in that, we can develop our own outcomes we're seeking to look for as well. And so one last thing, as we in our areas, we a few years ago asked our partners on the ground, what are the best ways we could serve you? Because we realized, we're not going to end child trafficking in Southeast Asia, obviously. We're not going to end child domestic servitude in Haiti. So if that can't be our outcome that we can make happen, what are we looking to do? Well, we realized we would measure our impact by the way we were able to help our partners who are trying to end those things. So when we talked to them, and we did a pretty extensive time there, they came out with five ways that we could best help the movement that they're involved in. For example, one of those was an expanded body of knowledge. Another one of those was growth of healthy and sustainable organizations, how to help them implement and spread the best practices in the field. And it also gave us this great opportunity to be able to address gap areas, because we as an organization or as a foundation, were committed to that particular directive, there were many foundations that were looking only for very tangible, measured, easily measured things. And there were a lot of gap areas that were a little more fuzzy or gray or maybe not as flashy that we were able to begin to address those gap areas within the movement. So, you know, those are, I guess, as I'm ending, you know, this is not the model, but as you develop your model, try to develop with focus, let the strategy evolve, commit to your own impact and outcomes that you're asking your partners to commit to, and see what happens.
Thank you, Lance, for joining us today. I love this model of zeroing in on specific areas for impact, becoming a resource for research and collaboration, and partnering with the grassroots at a deep level. I hope you've been inspired too. That's it for today's podcast. Subscribe to this podcast at our website at strongerphilanthropy.ca or find us on iTunes or other podcatcher apps. Don't forget to buy my book. strongerphilanthropy.ca/book has all the details. As well, reach out to me through Facebook or Twitter. Buen Camino.